ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Children with special needs, like those who have Down syndrome or spina bifida, face many challenges as they and their families deal with those conditions. One problem is the risk of obesity for those youngsters. What can be done about it? Our guest on this edition of UWM Today is working to help answer that question. Michelle Polfus is an assistant professor of nursing and joint chair in nursing research at both UWM and Children's Hospital here in Milwaukee. Welcome, Michelle. Good to have you on today's program.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I certainly have some friends who have kids with special needs, and I know that that's a really, really tough road for them to follow because there are so many issues that come up in these situations. I never really thought about obesity as being one of those problems.
I think it is one of those things that is not the primary thought that people come to when they initially think of those diagnoses. But what happens is that's the same in our medical world, is we put the priorities on maybe the surgical needs or the more acute needs that are going on at that time. And then as the time progresses, all of a sudden we have a problem with obesity, which puts these families in a really difficult situation because anyone that has a child or as we get older, once you have those habits ingrained, they're much harder to change, or once that weight is on, it's much harder to take off.
So does the weight, is it an issue that starts with birth or early adolescence? When do you begin to see the real signals that someone has a serious problem?
It varies per individual, but oftentimes for these populations, it can happen early on and consistently throughout their life. They will have various reasons why it occurs. One of the main purpose or reasons for that is they do have less muscle mass. If you think about a child with spina bifida, they'll have paralysis oftentimes or some level of immobility, so they'll have decreased muscle mass based on that. Children with Down syndrome also have a decreased muscle mass, and as we all know, muscle burns more calories than fat. So it's important for us to have as much muscle as we can. So that puts them at a deficit. So as they're doing their daily activities, we find that really they're already at a deficit. And even though they'll do the same activity as someone else at the same gender or their same age, they're not going to lose as many calories doing that just based on their body composition.
Now, again, with all the challenges that a lot of these kids have, a listener may say, well, geez, a few pounds overweight, you know, is that the biggest issue? But we're not talking in many of these cases, not just a few pounds, we're talking about obesity.
Definitely. It's really interesting because I'd like to throw out a specific number to show how astounding it is, but we don't have accurate numbers because it's really hard to get a good handle on what the statistics are for obesity in this population. If you think about it, when you go to your clinic visit, you're often going to be defined on a body mass index, which is done with your height and your weight. Children that can't stand, that's already putting them at an issue where they can't get a good accurate height measurement. And so using the typical body mass index that we use to define obesity is not relevant or as accurate in this population.
So what happens when you don't get an accurate measurement of the scale of this person's physical mm-hmm. being?
Well, you can take a scale weight, but as we all know, just looking at someone's number, it doesn't tell us a whole lot about their body composition. So it puts them at a risk of us just assuming that they are either possibly healthier than they are, and oftentimes that's not the case. So when we want to look at this nationally, we'll look at national databases, but we don't include individuals who are unable to stand in our national databases, or they may ask for a self-report number, which we know is not accurate. So we really lose that opportunity to say how much of a problem this is for the population. And as you said earlier, a couple of pounds here or there doesn't make a difference, but as they accumulate throughout the years, it can really impinge on their ability to self-manage their condition, be as independent as possible, have a really optimal healthy life.
This is the first time that I've really considered this challenge, and I'm wondering about folks in the medical profession. Were you surprised that more people aren't paying attention to weight as they're dealing with all of these other issues?
I think that's the key, is they're dealing with all of these other issues. When working in the medical world, it's very difficult because you have a lot of time constraints. You really have to prioritize the needs of that moment. And I think everyone, including the families and the medical providers, are doing the best that they possibly can. But at times, that priority is not always weight, because it's something that we'll deal with later, or we assume that if we tell someone to eat better that they are going to do that or exercise more. And we often don't take it one step further. Even in the general population, we know that health providers are not comfortable talking about weight. It's a very uncomfortable, or risk of stigma is involved with it. So oftentimes it's very easy to avoid if you don't take the notion and really make it a priority.
What about parents and family members? Mm-hmm. Are they aware of the issue? Are they comfortable talking about it?
Yeah. Well, I think that from my experience working with families in our research studies, they definitely are interested in it. They note that it's not the highest discussed point when they're in their medical visits. They also recognize that it's a risk, but they also are dealing with what's the highest priority of the day. And sometimes this is not the only child that they have in their family, so they're really at risk of just having to prioritize what goes on. And when you're looking at something that you're not going to see the immediate results of, if you eat that extra cookie or two a day, you don't see it immediately, but down the road it will come on. And so those are issues that you just run the risk of not prioritizing.
And I wonder if there's a tendency on the part of family members to say, because they're dealing with someone who has some real challenges, whether they might not see that extra cookie or sweet as a reward for getting past a mm-hmm. difficult moment in the day.
I think that's true for everyone in our population. A typically developing person also does the same thing. If we're bored, we eat. If we're happy, we eat. If we want to use the best technology in the world today, we don't have to exercise and do what we used to have to do. So it's not any different for people that have disabilities, and it puts them just at a higher risk of that problem occurring more. So parents will do the same thing. They're going to always try to do what's best for their child. But one of the things that I think is a really big problem is if we don't provide them the accurate information about how much of a deficit or how much of a risk they are at, they will try to do what they think is best, but they may not be able to know or recognize how significant the problem can be, or how much change they have to create to actually make a dent in the problem.
And as you pointed out a moment ago, this often doesn't rise to the level of even being discussed in a doctor visit if you've got a plethora of other issues in front of you.
Yes. Or to everyone's credit, even if it is discussed, it's very glossed over. Eat better, move more. But how do you do that if you live in a community that doesn't have activities for someone with a disability?
So this is the first phase of the research. You're not done, though, at this point in terms of studying the problem.
Yes. I wanted to jump in and just solve the problem, but that's not going to happen for anyone. When I start looking at this problem, I know from my previous work that there's a large problem with obesity in our world, or just overweight and obesity. When you look at someone with special needs, the risk is 2 to 3 times higher. And so when I wanted to look at discussing how we could actually fix the problem, I recognize that we have to be able to identify the problem first. So before we can intervene, we have to be able to say, how do we measure someone in a clinic setting or in a research setting accurately to know what their body composition is, so we can actually trend or watch what's going on with their muscle makeup and their fat mass?
So how do you do that? I mean, if someone's in a wheelchair, is there equipment or measuring devices that exist to even accomplish what you want in terms of getting that additional information?
We found that there are, but there's not an agreed upon or standardized methodology. So everyone does their own thing, and how they go about it may be different. And so it really causes a lot of variance in what's going on. When you're looking at height measurement, if you are unable to stand, oftentimes you'll resort to an arm span, which is measuring the arm width from tip of finger to tip of finger, otherwise recumbent length while the individual's lying down, or even a segmental length where you measure the body in segments and add it up. None of those are as equal to a standing height, but if you're going to choose one, you have to go with it. As I mentioned, there's not an agreed upon way, so that's part of our study, is to find out what one gives us the most accurate reliability of reference when you are looking at someone's height. And we know that there has to be some calculations or formulas to adjust for the person.
I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you're a nurse. You are helping to run research programs both at UWM and over at Children's Hospital. What's been the reaction from the medical community to the work that you're doing?
They're very interested. We've done some grand rounds, and we've talked about our research with people in the community and within publications, and people do reach out and say that this is a problem that either they weren't aware of or something that they want to deal with. It gets a little bit overwhelming because everyone wants to jump in and fix the problem, and we don't have that one answer. But that's not going to happen for any population. So we just realized that we're going to take it piece by piece and keep working at it and trying to understand the foundation of how do you measure and how do we understand how much energy in a day is expended is really an important component because that can help determine how much a person can take inward in caloric intake. So that helps define how we define our day-to-day behaviors and eating and activity and helps us understand how they could possibly change their weight if they choose to.
What about prescribing exercise? Is that practical for youngsters with these conditions?
Yes, it is. And it would be that we do that. I've seen prescriptions actually written for exercise. I think we have the same societal issues that make it harder. And then when you add a disability on, it can increase that even more so. Problems as far as accessibility, you know, sometimes it's hard for us to get up and go to the gym, but it can be 10 times harder if we don't have, if we're not sure if it'll be plowed out and our wheelchair might not take it from the car to getting into the gym. And once you're in the gym, what machines are going to be accessible for you? So that's one. Cognitive challenges with certain diagnoses like Down syndromes can make it harder for them to do some of the same. It's not impossible by any means, but it can just make it harder. So I think that our society has a lot of risk for obesity prevalence just by our technology that we have offered to us, the food that is offered to us, the portions that are offered to us. And then when you put it into a population that already has a lesser energy expenditure on a daily basis, a lesser ability to expend energy, you're going to create a bigger problem.
Boy, that's why there's no easy answer here.
Exactly.
You know, I'm thinking again of some friends who have youngster with some challenges, and they've told me that one of the issues that they face is finding time for themselves to exercise. Yeah. They're so busy providing care, and so you don't have the modeling that you might otherwise see in a family with kids without those problems.
That's another huge component of this. Obesity or weight issues are multifactorial. And if you think about a child, their biggest influence are the family members. And it doesn't mean that they are to blame by any means, but they are the role models. And oftentimes we don't take care of ourselves as adults, and then kids will start to pick up on those behaviors that we're doing. So if we're not role modeling the appropriate behaviors, they're not going to other, and it's a chicken and egg, and it just becomes a consistent cycle that is hard to break.
And then you throw in diet and the complications of fixing food for half the family that the way they like it, and then for the special needs child the way that they like it, and it sounds like a conundrum.
It is, and you never ever want to put someone at the table and have to treat them differently or have that child feel that they are different than anyone else. So that makes it even harder. They may have to have a smaller portion, but to be that parent, if you're going that route, you're going to tire yourself out and you're going to put the child at a risk of feeling that they're just not the same, and that's something that we really want to avoid if possible, but it's hard.
So this is you've finished the first phase of the research, but you're far from done. What happens next in terms of trying to test these early results against a broader population?
Yeah. Our early results gave us some really good information about interest level from the families on weight issues. It also showed us that we do have acceptability and feasibility of different measures to be used in these populations to look at energy expenditure. Our other analysis showed that there is a significant difference in caloric intake needs per day based on the amount of energy expended. We saw that there was, on average, 500 to 800 calories less expended per day, which means that they can take in caloric-wise 500 to 800 calories less based on their diagnosis and their mobility status. These were preliminary findings. It was a smaller sample. It was a pilot study. But our next step is, and it's already been put in for a larger grant, that we can do a larger sample and show that these are the correct answers, and then at that point start to intervene.
And so will you be doing that research just here in southeastern Wisconsin, or will this be part of a broader national study?
Yeah. It'll be a larger national study, and it's really exciting because it allows us to have interrelations with across the nation. So we'll have children's hospitals from Los Angeles, Alabama, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, and we're going to combine that and find a way to gather the large enough sample that'll give us a geographical representation and national representation to help us show the significance of our findings.
Because there could be differences depending on what part of the country you live in, right?
Sure. We really want to make this representative, and to have the opportunity to get a large enough sample of individuals with special needs together, you want to make it the best as possible.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio today is Michelle Polfis. Michelle is an assistant professor at UWM's College of Nursing. She also helps lead research programs at UWM and at Children's Hospital here in Milwaukee. We began the program by talking about work that she's doing in the field of obesity with children or among children with special needs. But that's just some of the work that Michelle and her other team members are involved in. Michelle is part of the Self-Management Science Center at UWM at the College of Nursing. And Michelle, I want to talk about some of the other work that you folks are engaged in, because it runs the gamut, doesn't it? I mean, looking at how people manage their health.
Yeah, so Self-Management Science Center is just a gem that we have in Milwaukee, and it's specifically at the College of Nursing at UW-Milwaukee that is amazing and it's brought about. It's a center that allows people to focus on research that looks at trying to how individuals and families self-manage their conditions. So it really works really well with chronic conditions. Obesity is my area of interest, but it could work with we have one researcher who's studying hypertension in African Americans. We have other researchers that look at gerontological issues. It can be across the board, and self-management really is just trying to improve the individual and family and how they manage their health on a daily basis and how they can optimize their health for the future. So it really fits to a multitude of issues.
Where do you find folks to work with, to do the research with? Are they referred to you, or do you work with doctors or nurses at other healthcare facilities?
It's a very open center that wants people to come in from the outside, and that's been really one of its strengths. Dr. Rachel Schiffman is our center director, and she wrote the grant for this and was able to obtain funding for the center through the National Institutes of Nursing Research. And what one of the goals are is to really broaden our ability to reach out to the community and have researchers work together. So we have researchers not only from the College of Nursing, but within other areas of UW-Milwaukee and from the community that can come. And we have monthly meetings where people can present their ideas and work together. And it really allows us to increase our collaborations, which really strengthens the research that's being done in this area too.
You mentioned a number of different challenges that you're studying. If you're studying, for example, as you do right now at the moment, obesity among children with special needs, and then you have a colleague who's doing research in hypertension in you know, African American or Latino population. Are there things you can learn from each other in terms of focusing on a specific demographic group within an area, even though those demographics are different?
I think so. And for my own personal experience, I've definitely learned from others when we talk about it. The stimulating conversations that come about really cause us all to think about our own populations and how we can apply what we can take from it, or how we can give suggestions to the other researchers. So it's been a lot of give and take. And I think it strengthens everyone's research when you get together and have that ability to talk in an open forum.
What really struck me about as I looked at some of the work that the center is doing are two of the words in the title, self-management. And this really gets to the heart of what you and your colleagues at the College of Nursing are focusing on, right? Not presuming that everything's going to be prescribed and dictated from the top down, but getting what individuals involved in their own decision making.
Exactly. I think empowering an individual to make a change in their life is going to be so much stronger, and it's going to last and be sustainable much longer than accepting that the provider is going to do that for them. Plus, with our healthcare system, I don't think that's something that we can rely on. So giving the individual the tools to improve their own life and helping them guide them along the way is definitely much more of a benefit to that individual or that family.
So when you think about self-management, what are the most effective tools to help people equip themselves to make good decisions going forward?
I think that is very individualized, and I think that's where research in medicine is going, is understanding that there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. We don't want to generalize and say everyone needs to self-monitor, but self-monitoring what they do on a daily basis may be a piece of their puzzle. So working with that population, getting to know that population and learning from them, and then individualizing that intervention or research to them is really the best that we can offer.
Is there a lot of information that already exists to help people in this self-management, or do you have to customize the suggestions or the directions to individuals who are facing the problems that we've described?
I think there are some general overseeing principles that can work with most populations, but once you get into that, you may have to specify it a little bit more for your population. In general, we want to know that awareness and education is there. What genetic or what biological makeup they are working with is going to put them in one position. And then as you take that into the context of where they're living or their environment, what works for someone that lives in an urban setting may not work for someone in a rural setting, so having to individualize it that way. And then individualizing how they look at their issue. Do they see it as an issue? Because, again, if I see it as an issue for them and they say, I don't really have a problem with this, the chances of them wanting to change it is probably not going to happen. So there's a lot of give and take along the way, and it's a trajectory of work that needs to be done as a partnership.
And thinking of that partnership, what about peers? Is there a role for friends or family members to participate in this self-management?
You bet. I think about it from a socio-ecological viewpoint, and especially with kids, peers become so important in those adolescent years. But even as adults, we really focus on our peers for what we do on for social events. And so when you think about your the social aspect of this, or ecological-wise, you have your home as your initial context, so that involves your family members, and then you go out to work or school, and that can involve or change your opportunities that you're given. And then in the community you live on, you have governance of rules that maybe will say how accessible things are, or how well they clean the streets, or how they design the pathways to walk in the area, or how safe the environment is, and that's going to make a difference. So it gets broader and broader to the point where I think there's many different aspects that influence.
So even if someone says, I want to take ownership, I have an issue here, I'm going to try to go ahead and fix this, it's not that easy because there are factors out of their control.
Exactly. But I think taking ownership and knowing what you can control is the first step. And then after that, you can always find a way. And I think there are definite mechanisms that can help, and you can guide yourself for the best success.
Why are nurses so critical to programs like this? There are a lot of healthcare providers out there. You're a nurse yourself. Yeah. You see your colleagues. What's special about your standing in terms of that patient relationship that can make a difference?
Well, nurses are notoriously very caring, and not that all health providers are not, but one thing that I like about nursing is that we look at the person as a whole individual. So you don't want to take just into account their biological makeup. You really look at their whole experience of life. You look at their spiritual makeup. You look at their abilities and what they're capable of. And I think when you put the whole person into perspective, it gives you more to work with, and I think that person recognizes that you're looking at them as a whole versus just looking at that organ that you're dealing with or just looking at the heart. So that's one piece of nursing that's really important that I think we all have in common. And I will say, especially with obesity and other work, you are not able to do successful interventions just with nursing alone. It's really interdisciplinary. And so that's been one of the neat experiences I've had, is when you bring together multiple disciplines, you can complement each other. So you can have that psychological perspective from psychology, you can have the medical perspective, you can have the nursing perspective, and it really works the best. But nursing alone, I'm a very big proponent of how we can help an individual.
And of course, that means that you have to have other healthcare providers who are open to maybe letting go and giving up a little bit of that control, and knowing that the nurse has so much face time with the patient.
Yeah, I think once we recognize that everyone wants what's best for the patient, that usually is the guiding force. And so if they recognize that the nurse has more time with the patient, they oftentimes can see that as a positive, and they can give them that time because they know they can use it well. And if they're just not allowed the same amount of time, it becomes a team issue versus just one person dealing with the issue.
You used a great term back a moment ago, notoriously caring. What a great description for the nurses that I've known.
I think it's one of our good things. And we often sometimes put our caring for others in front of ourselves. So that's a whole other topic for another day. But it's important to take care of ourselves just as much, because then you can give back that much more to the patients or those around you.
Yeah, you do run the risk of burnout. I mean, what you've just described in terms of interacting with people, with youngsters with disabilities, I mean, that takes a lot of effort to think through all of the different iterations of treatment or care that you have to consider suggesting to these families.
Thank you for noticing that. I think it's really important. And I think one of the best parts of my position is that when I work with families, I think any family, they can recognize when someone really wants what's best for them, and they appreciate it so much. So then they give back, and you learn so much more. And it really is a give and take back and forth between the patient and the family and the nurse or the provider. And it's been helpful because it's really moved my research in a new direction, and it helps strengthen what I do or what I'll do next.
Just a minute left, and let's talk about what you do next. The focus right now is on the obesity study, special need families. What else do you see yourself pursuing down the road?
At this point, there's so much to do that this will take up the next couple of years, as far as I'm looking at different ways to deal with parenting behaviors or feeding behaviors that can help influence positive behaviors in the child at an early stage. So that's another research study. We are looking at how the ability to be positive can actually change the way that you think and change the behaviors that you do. And so that's another potential study that we're looking at. And then getting this study done that looks at how to accurately measure body composition, along with finding out what our energy expenditure is for a national representative sample, is the primary.
I'm getting tired just listening about all the agenda in front of you, but, you know, wonderful, wonderful ambitions, and we wish you the very best as you pursue all of these paths of discovery.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk today.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Michelle. Michelle Polfus, who's an assistant professor of nursing at UWM's College of Nursing. She also is joint chair in nursing research at UWM and Children's Hospital here in Milwaukee. That's all for this week's program. Thanks so much for taking some time to learn about how research in this community at places like UWM and Children's Hospital and other places makes such a big difference in the lives that we live. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.